Hello, and welcome to Only the Avatar and Avatar, the Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm Veda, and this week, Christina's on vacation, and actually, this is our second time recording the episode because we had some technical difficulties, but I have an amazing, amazing guest, my favorite person to watch TV with and discuss any show, my lovely sister, Deepa. Deepa, thanks for coming back and also recording this again.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So before we start, I thought you can tell our audience what attracted you to Avatar, how long you've been watching, your favorite ship, just to give everyone, you know, some background about you and the fandom.
I am a diehard Zuko fan. I started watching this in, I think, a couple of years before high school. Our first episode that we ever watched, I don't know if you've talked about this, was at
my cousin's house.
Mm-hmm. And it was actually only me. Veda likes to put herself in the memory. But she was not there.
I feel like that I have that memory.
I don't think you were there because I may have removed you from the
memory. I don't know who removed who. Like, what is truth right now?
But it was me and Kaivalyan Kausthub, shout out. And it was also a very strange episode to start off with. I had no idea what was going on. It was the episode that we watched was Appa's Lost Days.
It's a very artsy episode.
Very artsy, but there were only three words spoken in the entire thing. I had absolutely no idea what was going on, but I must have identified with Aang's rage and Appa's rage as well.
I don't know. I feel like it might be a very interesting episode to watch because it was so different than what was on TV at the time, but it was also, like, we liked anime and manga and stuff like that too. So the animation style was familiar enough, but then the episode was like kind of intriguing, you know? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I was just so fascinated by this. And then Avatar, when the show had ended and we never really watched the full thing, I started randomly watching it after school when it was coming on Nick, and I would make my amazing Mexican cheese quesadilla with black bean and corn salsa after school and watch the episodes and take my time before starting homework.
I mean, seriously though, that coming home from school 4 p.m. making a snack, putting on the TV, just that peak relaxation vibe before starting your homework and choosing the perfect show to watch. And I think Avatar I think it was one of our choices. I also liked watching Oprah and Arthur during that 4 p.m. block.
I mean, great relaxation, great just feel-good shows.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any shows like that now for you that are also comfort watches?
I'm Sorry has actually become a comfort-watching show despite all the cringe moments and the front tushy. But it is definitely something now that I turn to now that I guess The Office was removed off of Netflix. Right? For almost a year now. But I'm Sorry has definitely become my comfort watch.
Yeah. Honestly, doing this rewatch podcast with Christina, it's been so fun because it's nice to watch the show as an adult and see all the different layers and themes. And like, I always liked the show and I always saw the spiritual bent to it. But I think now on rewatch, I'm like, this is so cool that it introduced so many people to like some mythology, theology, and like deeper thinking and spirituality within your life. And I think it's cool that a TV show was able to do that.
I love that. And it's soft enough that it to introduce that idea of spirituality without being overtly didactic or dogmatic either. Mm-hmm. It's just an idea that's presented and very easily digestible, mm-hmm, with really great points that cross over so many different types of homes and just overall overarching ideas of various religions, mm-hmm, and different ways of life. And it connects them in such an easy, beautiful way.
So I was actually talking to our cousin that we watched the show, and then he said that on his rewatch, what he noticed was how bad the animation style was. And I was like, mm-hmm, yeah, this show is old now. It's like, what, 15 years old? So, of mm-hmm course, the animation style looks dated. But like, you're a doctor, but you're also an artist. So like, how do you feel about the animation style?
I mean, when I watched the first season again last year when we initially started. I started this with Veda, but I surpassed her. Honestly, yeah, I mean, we're going I was not making slow. A podcast.
We're watching one episode a week. Like, we're going mad slow, but I'm sure anyone else who's watching it is, like, binging it.
But it was – it kind of does take you back to a little bit of a different time, and it does feel simpler, but I enjoyed that. It's part of the show, and watching – as the creators themselves and as they get more funding and, you know, now that we know the backstory of what actually goes into a TV show, you see them grow as well with their characters. And it's from a more creative standpoint. I think I actually liked seeing that. Yes, of course, I enjoyed watching season three a little bit better. It's like the return of the king of Avatar. So it's a lot more satisfying, but it's still part of it. And also, they do have their original pilot episode that they had drawn and showed to the Nick board or whatever, the Nickelodeon production board. And when you see that, you're like, oh, whoa, season one was great.
You're like, oh, Lord, how is this approved? But you know what's weird is I don't really like watching very computerized animation. Like, I haven't watched any of really the new Pixar movies, because something about the style of animation, like, it makes it hard for me to get involved in the story. I don't know why. Like, I know a lot of people like Luca and stuff, and I was like, I can't watch this because of the animation style. And even the same thing, like, I wanted to watch Soul, but I didn't like the animation style, so I couldn't watch it. So I'm like, I wonder why I get turned off from that. I don't know why.
I don't know either. I mean, we had this discussion when we were trying to watch Luca as well as Moana, because I have not seen that.
But I didn't like the animation style. I was like, I can't watch this. I like as shut down.
I saw that. And then we ended up watching The Princess Bride, which is another great classic and deserves its own podcast as well.
It is. I honestly love The Princess Bride, and I feel like it hits this perfect tone that we don't see anymore of, like, campy, ironic, but just so sincere. And the sincerity in the movie, and also, like, all the actors, like, how much they get into these campy roles. And it's just, like, a true adventure story, and I think it connects everyone back to their childhood. And I think that's what the success of that movie is that it really takes you back to being a kid, and, like, no matter what age you are watching it, like, you suddenly are like, it, like, lights that inner child.
You're transformed. It's back. It's Wednesday morning. You're sick and not feeling good, and your grandparent or somebody's staying home with you because you're sick and hoping you feel better.
Yeah. I don't know.
And that's what my sister would do for me.
Of course. We had so many fun games that we played as kids.
Yeah. And I think that sincerity is also deeply in Avatar as well, and I think that's also why I come back to it so much now, even though now it's also going to be removed from Netflix.
Are they removing it?
Yeah, I thought so. Nickelodeon's going to have their own streaming platform.
All right. Did you watch the iCarly reboot?
No, I hated iCarly.
I haven't watched the reboot, but I used to kind of watch that show, even though I was way too old for it.
Oh my god, you didn't kind of watch it. You dedicatedly watched it. No, when we were babysitting Luke. Yeah. You were like, let's watch
iCarly. Yeah, because I had an excuse since I was taking care of a child. So I had an excuse to watch this very childish show.
Folks, people are getting called out in this episode.
The takes. Actually, I need armor because you're going to reveal my inside secrets here.
Hot takes, folks. That's what today's episode's about.
But actually, today we are covering a really fun episode, The Firebending Masters, Season 3, Episode 12. What did you think of the episode? Actually, let's jump into a summary. So before we give our opinions on this episode. So in this episode, we see Zuko train Aang, but he has lost his firebending abilities, basically. Like, it's just a little puff of smoke. He's unable to bend in any powerful way. And like the viewer, Zuko is confused. He doesn't understand what's going on. Why has he lost his abilities? And now in his new, like, therapy vibes, he's able to do some self-searching. And he wonders that if the source of his bending was actually rage, and now that he's switched sides and has become a calmer guy, he's lost his power. And Toph, she gives some backstory about how she discovered bending, and she like improved her bending and understood her bending by going to the original source of earthbending, the badger moles. And so she suggests that Zuko goes to the original source of firebending to connect with the art form, and Zuko and Aang should do that together. And we learn from Zuko that the dragons were the original benders. I love how all of the original benders come from nature, right? Like, that's the source. Mm-hmm. But dragons apparently are now extinct in this world. So Zuko and Aang decide to go to the next thing, the Sun Warrior civilization, an indigenous people who worshipped the dragon for centuries. And the civilization is long gone, but the world that they built is still there. So Zuko and Aang decide to have a little boys' trip to go to the remains of the civilization.
What are there? Is there a specific name for a boys' trip?
I don't know. The men, the manly men are
these two last brain cells.
No, but Sokka and Aang have more last brain cells energy. Zuko yeah. and Aang have like that senior who's best friends with the freshman.
Yes. Oh my god, 100%. And so you have a little bit of. Not exactly blind leading the blind, but Zuko, but they kind of are in the end. But since they're just starting on their journey together, they're both trying to be on their best behavior. Mm-hmm. So Zuko and Aang are walking around in these ruins and end up actually discovering that the Sun Warrior people are still alive, thriving, and well. And through a series of unfortunate events, Zuko and Aang end up getting stuck in this gooey-like material. And end up, because they get caught trying to steal something, or supposedly steal, a treasure of the Sun Warrior people, they have them perform a ritual for the masters. And if the masters of the Sun Warrior people deem Aang and Zuko worthy based on their performance of this ritual.
And their ancestors.
As well as their ancestors and their family, and essentially kind of bearing their souls to these masters. The masters will decide if Zuko and Aang will survive or not. And depending on that, they can learn the secret of firebending. The masters, Ran and Shaw, end up being the two remaining dragons of the world. And they are massive, beautiful, very impressive creatures. And they end up deeming Zuko and Aang worthy. And end up giving them visions through seeing the masters perform this firebending. And through that experience, they realize, Aang and Zuko, they realize that fire is the source of life. And it is essentially the sun that's inside of you that's doing this energy. And so they leave the Sun Warriors with a renewed, in Zuko's case, ability to firebend. And Aang a little bit less fearful of firebending, mm-hmm. a stronger friendship, and an exciting sense of new confidence and faith.
Yeah, such a great episode. I love that we actually learned that the Firebender Empire is actually a colonizer, you know, and they continue to be, and that there were these people who worshipped nature and worshipped fire as something that's a source of life, is a source of beauty, and the power comes from that way rather than a point of destruction. And it's interesting to see, like, when did this split happen in this type of bending, right? Like, when did it suddenly split in this way? So I thought that was really interesting and mm-hmm. such a cool, it was so cool to actually see this ancient site, right? Like where these people lived. And it reminded me of our family vacation that we took to Humpy, but we actually went at different times when we went to Humpy, and which is an ancient civilization in India from the 14th century, and the actual capital city of this nation remains there. And it's, you know, grandiose, it's beautiful, it's like a surviving remains of this ancient kingdom. And when you walk through it, you feel connected to these people who lived there thousands of years ago. And that's what I felt like when we saw the animation of Zuko and Aang walking through this quiet, deserted village, and they fall mm-hmm. into that booby trap, and Zuko's like, oh, this is interesting here, this I'm understanding these types of people.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's very impressed that this booby trap has survived for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. He's very fascinated by that. And also looking at how the architecture reminded him, I think he mentioned that he can see where the inspiration for the fire temples came from. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like he's going back to his roots.
He says that, you know, like, oh, these temples are eerily familiar. And I also mm-hmm. like that line, like, the shadows of the past can be felt by the present. Like, it's that evolution of ideas, but there was also that split in ideas. So I don't know. I think it was really interesting to see. And then also their reaction to that huge mural. But the best part of this episode, there's so many good parts of this episode, but the best part for me was seeing that bond between Zuko and Aang grow throughout the episode, and especially mm-hmm. the soft ways that they start to admire each other and compliment each other. Like Zuko like calls Aang smart, the way that they like lean on each other's expertise and actually become a good team,
and they play on each other's strengths as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cute. Although I did love how Aang totally played, I don't normally play this card, but I'm the Avatar. And I think it's funny because in the episode, you can see that Zuko's also being like, oh, yeah, now I'm with the Avatar now. I'm fine.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I'm not on the bad guy's side anymore.
I wonder if it makes him feel calmer knowing that, you know, he has that protection of the Avatar and like he's understanding his destiny and going with it. But when they go into the temple and they see all those statues, I love that Aang's first reaction is to actually copy the statues and move with them.
I know, it's so smart. I just also have to say that for a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old, they are so smart and also such great diagnosticians of themselves, too. Like, I have to say that Zuko's, and I know they have to also do this for a 20-minute show, but the fact that Zuko could tell that, hey, this is why I think I lost my ability to firebend, mm-hmm. is really profound.
Yeah, like, he really understands himself, and that's so interesting. But they also are kids, and they make stupid decisions. Like, once Aang realizes that the dance is a passcode, and it opens up this glowing orb, like, they know it's a bad idea to touch it. It is a bad idea. There's booby traps everywhere. You never really touch anything glowing.
Like, and shiny.
And shiny. Come on, we saw this in Aladdin, we learned this in chemistry, you don't just go directly touch everything, like wafting motion here, like you can't just go and touch it.
They should have wafted.
They should have wafted, like why did they touch it? I was like, yeah, and then also a great moment is when they touch it, whatever, they get into the trap, they're stuck, and they're just stuck there together, and both of them are weirdly calm for being stuck there.
They're just hanging out, hoping that something will happen. And, you know, luckily Aang at least blew them in the way that their face faces the open wind, because that could have been really disastrous. And they're just literally chilling up there.
I know. It's like, all right, what should we do here? And it's like, I don't know, I guess think about our place in the universe.
And, oh, Zuko, such a sensitive soul.
He really is. Scorpio energy for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. But it was interesting when we actually see that this tribe has remained alive and, as you said in the summary, thriving and, like, continuing to do their ways of life and, like, almost protect the truth of what firebending is to how it's been completely disordered. It's almost like maybe they're, like, the Fire Nation proper is like these fundamentalists and removed the idea of the true religion and like took it in some mm-hmm. other ways, you know, like.
I mean, they went off, right? Imperialism.
Yeah.
So seeing how, not simplistic, because it clearly was not, they have a lot of nuance in their way of life and their system and the hierarchy, but we kind of get a glimpse of, but not really as much. Mm-hmm. But them transitioning to how extravagant like the Fire Zuko's Nation family is.
Yeah.
And when you see how Zuko lived his life in the beginning of season 3 compared to how he's living now, and then when he goes to visit the Fire Temples or the Sun Warrior Temples, you're like, wow, what happened in between all of those years?
I know. I'm actually so curious to learn more about that. But it's like they have to do this ritual, right? Like to prove that they're mm-hmm. that they're good so they can learn the true ways. And the Sun Warriors don't think these two are going to pass the ritual. Like even though Aang is the Avatar, the Sun Warrior Chief is basically like, hey, you abandoned our people for 100 years. And Zuko, like, we also learn in this episode that Zuko's family, Sozin, were directly responsible for killing the dragons, the actual source of understanding firebending. So it's like, how can these two people who have so much actual darkness in their past be approved by the two masters of firebending to learn the secret? And the Sun Warriors say that part of the ritual is that you have to hold the eternal flame, which they have been keeping alive for years, just parts of the eternal flame, climb up this huge mountain and present it to the masters. And, you know, like, Aang is worried because he's worried to even touch fire after harming Katara.
So there is definitely, you see all of Aang's anxiety and fear in the sense of having to use what he feels is so unsafe, mm-hmm. and brought him such a terrible experience. And you see Zuko, on the other hand, who's so comfortable with the fire itself and so comfortable with that, but at the same time having so much of that same anxiety and fear in the sense of the destruction that his family brought.
I know. But, like, can you believe about the dragon thing? Like, what was your reaction when you learned that? And also that Iroh may have been the person to kill the last dragon, and that's how he achieved his fame.
I mean, I was shocked, and I'm very sad to say that I believed them. I was like, oh my god, maybe this was Iroh's past, and this is what probably brought about his own change, mm-hmm. after his son died and seeing all of that destruction. And, you know, this must have been before he had that entire awakening experience. And so, you know, I mean, it does. I am sorry to say that I thought ill of Iroh.
I know. And I was glad that we learned that he actually didn't do it. And he kept the secret of the animals. Because, like also, what was wrong with Sozin? Like, that is something that I can't get behind. How, like, people had dragons as pets. And people, like, how can you go on a killing spree of dragons? Like, I don't really get it.
I don't understand that either, because Sozin was also seen riding a dragon. Like, I thought Sozin rode a dragon.
Right, with Roku?
As well, with Roku. And so I just don't understand, in that time of the Hundred Years War. Also, Sozin must have had amazing geriatric genes for living so long.
How did he live that long? Like, committing so many crimes, too.
That's what I don't understand. And also, if all this was happening and Roku was just like, nah, man, sorry, not taking this one. gotta take this L. You know, I'm just...
Like, how did he not even protect the dragons? Like, it's obviously bad. You don't kill the source of bending. Like, things... It just seemed really weird to me.
So there's a lot of things. And I know... I mean, I just really would have liked a little bit of Harry Potter Half-Blood Prince backstory of Sozin.
Yeah.
With just some more deets, you know?
Yeah. And... I don't know. It's really interesting, right? Like, again, tying it back to, like, climate change and keeping a balance of nature and, like, not letting species overrun, but also not depleting them. And, like, you can't just burn everything. It doesn't work like that. But I like when Aang is holding the fire and he's like, oh, this is a little heartbeat. And that's like that moment where he starts to see fire as something different.
Mm-hmm. I love that change. And I think also Zuko started having, this is also that process for him to change as well, that yes, fire can be destructive, but, you know, there is also this creative life force and finding a new purpose for himself of how to firebend rather than just rage and anger.
Mm-hmm.
Which also brings up an interesting point, you know, like, what's the firebending theory taught in firebending schools?
Yeah, do they just try to get everyone pissed? Like,
yeah.
Like, can you imagine just, like, prodding everyone and making everyone as angry as possible to bend? Like, I don't get that either.
And so and we spoke about this briefly one time too, that, you know, what, I don't know, I always think of when you meet all the military people and all the firebenders that are going out and doing all of this, they're also great benders as well.
Yeah.
So how are they trained? What's that training like?
Maybe it comes into,
what are their motivation?
Like, patriotism for the people. Like, it comes mm-hmm. down into, like, that thing that Sozin shows of our way of life is the best and we need to spread this way of life. So that's not even mm-hmm. anger, but it's like this thing of, like, we are the best.
Supremacy
that actually propels their bending. But Aang and Zuko get to the top, they're on this bridge, they're holding up their flames to these two tunnels on the side of the bridge, presenting it to the masters. But, you know, their goofy, silly moment here that they end up dropping the flames, and then Aang is like, it's a little chaotic. I was like cringing. Aang is like going to Zuko being like, can I take some flame? And then Zuko's like, no.
He's trying to cheat on a ritual.
I know. I was like, oh God, these two goons up there, no idea what they're doing. Not even, and there are moments where Zuko shows a confidence because he has a newfound confidence in himself that he actually made this decision to change. So he's like, we're going to be fine up there. Like, mm-hmm. this is our destiny. But then there's other times, like, when this happens and they don't have any fire, they're just like, doop, 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 doop.
And they were also at the bottom of the hill, at bottom of the stairs. They're saying that, you know, what's the worst that can happen? They're taking on Zuko, Crown Prince of the Fire Nation, and Aang, the Avatar, who's been gone for 100 years. So,
yeah.
But a little bashful then when they see that the masters are actually these two magnificent
ancient
dragons.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I think it's such a beautiful moment when Ran and Shaw come through. And again, it's like it ties to the themes of the show of yin and yang, you know, these opposite forces creating balance. It's also just like Zuko and Aang, or you know, like it's mm-hmm. these two polar opposites coming together. They show like a red flame and a blue flame, and the dragons kind of do this amazing dance. And that's when Aang also realizes that passcode is the dance that these dragons are doing.
The dancing dragon.
Yes.
Also, shout out to Kaguya. The animation in this episode is amazing. It's I do not beautiful. Think they would have been able to do this episode when they had initially started. And seeing the dragons do their dance, like actually feeling and being able to see the pressure from them flying and blowing their wings. I don't know.
I guess these dragons have wings, but usually in like Asian culture, dragons don't have wings. But in Western culture, they do. Like Asian dragons are depicted as more serpentine. Mm-hmm. But they do have little wings, but they kind of float. It does seem like they're swimming. It seems like they're in water, right?
It was beautiful. And the way that you can see Zuko and Aang feeling that pressure of the beating wings, but also the heat of the fire. And
I love Aang being like with them. I love Aang being like, we need to just do something, like, let's do the dance. And it becomes mm-hmm. this amazing choreographed moment where all these forces are one, and you see that there's multiple colors in fire. Like, it's not just a simple red. Like, you see the complexity of the element, the complexity of how to use it, and you see mm-hmm. you actually, it ties back to fire being this life force, fire being that heartbeat. It's just like mm-hmm. all the beauty of the world is in this one moment. All the beauty of life is in this one moment.
Mm-hmm. Fire is life and destruction. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
that I duality love that. Again.
Yes, the duality of fire, the duality of the duality of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And also one thing I'd like to highlight is I think Aang and Zuko both exhibit this, sometimes a little bit more than Aang, but just that innate knowledge of Matt for a lesser, for not as great of a term, that inherent knowledge of magic mm-hmm. almost within bending and the
intuition. But Aang has 100, like he has all the knowledge of the Avatar within him. That's right? True. So for him mm-hmm. it probably comes up as just like an intuition, like standing on the bridge realizing, okay, we need to dance with them. Like that mm-hmm. comes from some deep knowledge that he may not understand, but that comes from all the various reincarnations. Like it seeps through him sometimes.
And I love that. And also that Zuko almost, I mean, he does question a little bit, but then he knows, he's starting to know when to go along and when to listen. And mm-hmm. that's also when they start really listening to each other. And I love that. It's a testament to their growing friendship.
Yeah. And it's, you know, actually the Sun Warriors are surprised at the reaction from the masters, the dragons. And they originally thought that Zuko and Aang would be dinner for the masters. But like they see that they have been accepted, and mm-hmm. Zuko is able to understand while he's within the flame. Aang is able to understand while they're, you know, in the flame, and the masters have judged them worthy of this knowledge. And we also, again, learn that Iroh spared the dragons. Like, he actually came here, had the ability to kill them, but he was protected and deemed worthy. So again, like, all of this comes together at the end, and they begin to see fire is energy and life. It can be used as a destructive force, but so can anyone's life, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love this episode. It's so good.
It's so good. It's so good. And we didn't even cover all the humorous moments in the episode, but of course, Aang calling Zuko in the beginning Sifu Hotman is classic. Just there's like so many little bits of physical comedy in this episode, and the way that it ends, we hit on that too, as like Zuko and Aang are recounting the story to their friends. Like, Sokka's like, okay, so you just did a dance, like you just learned a dance, so I guess we're gonna tap dance to victory, like that's what this is.
Zuko is vehemently saying that it is not a dance and it is a wise thousands of year old ritual. And when Sokka asks him what's it's called, sheepishly says the dancing dragon.
Yeah, so dances in the name. So do you have any like top moments in this episode?
Gosh, there's so many. I really just love these moments between Zuko and Aang, and I think one of my favorites is when they're on the hill together and Zuko's having his like, I understand moment. That always makes me tear up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I really love how they portrayed the changing nature of firebending, because we've had like three seasons of portraying firebenders as evil, and even Sokka thinks that all firebenders are evil. And I think this was a great way to also show the audience that there's this ancient way of bending that isn't. I love all this history of bending, like the badger mole section with Toph. Mm-hmm. And I loved like the dragon lore that comes out. And I have to give a call out to Toph, because I used to not like her at all as before. And then the more I've rewatched it, I'm like, Toph is an amazing character. And you realize that when she came into the group, she had trouble adjusting. And now that Zuko's coming into the group, she's kind of leaving space for him to fit in. And she's so much more open to him because she wasn't attacked by him for like whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So she has that openness. So I like that space for Zuko and Toph's friendship.
And also, yes, and she is actually really such a great friend, because he did by mistake injure her feet, mm-hmm. which was a huge thing for her. And she still forgave him for that. And that, I think, speaks volumes of how she is as a person.
Mm-hmm. She's a great character. And I'm like, kind of like, why did I not realize that before? Like, she's
hidden
awesome.
Gem.
Yeah.
She's hidden gem. She's a hidden gem. She's a hidden Team gem. Avatar.
But I would rate it 5 out of 5 stars. We get the humor. We get like the backstory lore. And I love how the episode plays with this like duality theme, like good and evil, and how that's in within all of us. And I love this like rebrand, I guess, of fire, mm-hmm. as like the source of life and energy. And like, we all have the sun inside of us, as I guess Aang points out, right? Or does, yes. Zuko point that out?
I think Zuko points that out to the sun warriors.
And they're like, yeah, that's why we're called the sun warriors, bro.
But I agree, 5 out of 5. It's a fantastic episode. I do wish that they would delve into the history of the Sun Warriors and just that overall path of what happened in between those years. Mm-hmm. But I get it. It's got to be 20 minutes. But
I know. See, basically,
Aaron and Brian, if you ever listen to this, this is some of the questions we also want answered.
Yeah, we want, like, I don't know. I really love a prequel, like, world building kind of stuff. So yeah, I would love that. But awesome episode, so fun. Thank you for coming on and also recording again. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to have you on the show because you're my sister. So
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for listening. And all of us will be back next week. Christina has some very exciting news. So happy to share that with everyone when she's back on the pod. Thank you for joining us. And Deepa, you were an awesome guest. And I hope you'll be able to record with us again soon.
I hope so too. This was so much fun.
Yep. Thanks for being on. See you all next week. Bye.